to where Death Holler brought us. Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
No, except the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death. Joining me as always is my co-host, Urena. And also Noah's on this episode. And we are discussing the spiritual successor to Night of the Creeps, in a lot of people's opinions, Slither from 2006. Tagline, what's gotten into you?
Hell yeah. I like that.
Directed by James Gunn, written by James Gunn, music by Tyler Bates. Budget of $15 million U.S. dollars, it made $12.8 million U.S. dollars in the box office.
Fuck, man. That kind of sucks.
Yeah, it lost money, unfortunately. According to James Gunn, he got really good critic reviews on this movie, especially for a horror film, and it gave him a lot of opportunities later on, you know, because, and so it worked out for him.
Okay. So, he's doing pretty good, everyone. Don't worry.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. Although if he fucks up the Superman movie, he might not be doing so good. So fingers crossed. Principal players, Nathan Fillion plays Bill Pardy, the town sheriff and everyman protagonist in the movie. Nathan Fillion is most commonly known from the show Firefly. And the,
I've never seen it, and everyone swears this is the best show ever, and it should have never been canceled.
They had all the opportunity in the world to screw it up, is all I'm going to say, because the setup and the acting and the story was perfect. Like, Space Cowboy, sign me up. Like, I mean, It was awesome. He was also in Castle. He was the main character in that show. And he's actually in Deadpool and Wolverine, his Headpool, the little zombie guy that's floating around with the little spinny propeller thing.
Whoa, Reverend. Whoa. Spoilers. Nobody knew that.
That's on IMDb. There's a bucket of Headpool. Calm down. Elizabeth Banks plays Starla Grant, the trophy wife, trapped with a monster. She was in The Hunger Games. She was in Brightburn, which is...
I think
it's a pretty decent movie.
Alien season.
The Uninvited, and of course she was in the Pitch Perfect movies because she was producer on all of those, I believe.
I really just resonated with Elizabeth Banks' character so much in this movie. I, too, am a trophy wife trapped with a monster.
Wow.
Oh, man. Tanya Saulnier plays Kylie Strutmeyer, the high schooler who gets a glimpse of the hive mind of the movie.
That was pretty cool.
that's a pretty cool scene, a good way of explaining how everything happened without, you know, and they did show some stuff too. She was in the 2006 Nicolas Cage Wicker Man, so there's that.
Yeah.
She was in an episode of Supernatural, and she was also in an episode of Smallville.
I bet you she blew Jensen. That's how she got those parts.
She's a pretty young girl, so hopefully not, but knowing him, I mean, or in your thoughts on him at least. Michael Rooker plays Grant Grant.
Never heard of him.
The rich man turned amorphous zombie-creating monster. Obviously, he was Merle in The Walking Dead. That's his most recent big-time role, besides being Mary Poppinjall in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, my God.
And his horror movie breakout film is Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. He goes pretty dark in that movie. Nice. So, which will be reviewed on Human Horror Season. I mean, we've got to cover that movie.
Yeah.
Greg Henry plays Jack McCready, the foul-mouthed mayor, and my favorite character in the whole entire fucking movie. He was in Payback. Really weird character in Payback. I don't know if you've seen that with Mel Gibson.
It's a hell of a good movie.
He's the bad guy, and he's paying a Asian dominatrix to beat him constantly throughout the movie. Like, that's his weird quirk or whatever.
Wait, you can get paid for that? We're doing it for free.
Really?
Mental abuse don't count. Well, actually, some people do pay for that, so I take that back. Raising Cain, which was a 1990s movie with John Lithgow, which was about a serial killer, which is an interesting movie.
Nice.
And he was also in Guardians of the Galaxy, because if you work with James Gunn and he really likes you, you're going to have a job for life.
Yes, he got a job for life.
Don Thompson plays Wally, the deputy and friend of Bill. He was in Watchmen, Red Riding Hood, and two episodes of Supernatural.
He probably blew Jensen.
I hope not, for everybody's sake. And then Lloyd Kaufman, from Troma, played a sad drunk in the movie because Lloyd Kaufman is a, you know, gave James Gunn his start. So you gotta be loyal to the people that helped you get where you're going. So. Yeah. In synopsis, in the small town of Wheelsy, South Carolina.
Is that even a real place?
No.
Okay. Sounds like it
is. The citizens are gearing up for Deer Cheer, the opening celebration of deer hunting season. Unfortunately, a parasitic life form from deep space has crash-landed and has plans on hunting every living creature on planet Earth. Inserting itself into the brain stem of a local businessman, Grant Grant, the sentient alien begins mutating a local whore into its broodmare as well as its host. Brain-controlling slugs are born and take over the locals, leaving only the foul-mouthed mayor, the sarcastic sheriff, local teacher, and a teenager to defend Earth. Bill is having a bad day, McCready gets the worst kind of lay, and Starla is every woman in the world. Slug it out.
Shut the fuck up.
Other taglines. Horror has a new face.
No.
From the people that brought you 2004's Dawn of the Dead, Feed the Fear.
Yeah, no. From the people who brought you Dawn of the Dead, Feed the Fear, maybe, because, I mean, this feeding is definitely a thing in this film, but I don't know so much about the fear. There was no fear about the people getting fed. It was more of, I'm itchy and I'm hungry. Itchy, hungry.
We're itchy.
Yeah.
Quotes from the movie, and there's plenty. I just had to choose a few. Toynier, or however you say his name, he's the old guy that's one of the sheriff's department, referring to the mutated Grant.
You better say it with the accent.
He looks like something that fell off my dick during the war.
That was funny.
Jack really? McCready, in response to hearing about how the alien hive mind came from outer space, if I wasn't about to shit my pants, I'd be fucking fascinated.
Yep.
Bill Party, after seeing a zombie become part of Grant, well, now that's some fucked up shit.
Yeah, I think.
Jack McCready wiping off his mouth, tried to get in my mouth. What kind of thing wants you to eat it?
Yeah, what kind of a thing wants you guys to eat it? Fucking sickos.
And then Brenda Gutierrez, the whore.
Yes.
The little fuckers are tearing me apart. And they do.
Yes, literally.
All right, visuals. I I said it whenever we covered Rabbit 2019. I love me a good Cronenberg-esque thing-like monster. They went with it with Grant. By the end of the movie, it's fucking ridiculous, and I love it. Even Brenda, like, with that big balloon that she is before she tears apart. Like, there is some really good fucked up monsters in this movie.
Reverend, do you just like weenie worms? It's okay to say it. Like,
well, and here's something that I want to call back to. Do you not think that he was, I mean, he says that that was his inspiration, Rabid, in, or, you know, in particular, mm-hmm. and Shivers, he throws that in there. That, the several of the things in this movie, like the little thing that came out of the vagina-looking thing from outer space, the little bitty thing that shoots in the brain, Grant's brainstem,
yeah.
kind of looks like something that, like, that came out of, you know, Rose and Rabid.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a theme going on with these movies, for sure. I do want to say that Brenda as a balloon was my least favorite visual of the movie.
Because it's a little too much?
It's just too much, yeah. Now, exploding and the worms falling out of it, that was cool. Like, but her and then her still talking and the fuckers are tearing me apart, it was just too much for me. Other than that, though, everything else looked really, really good. I did like how Grant was kind of like, you know, mutating. Like, I think how he was transitioning was actually really fucking cool.
Transitioning?
Yes. He's a transhuman in this.
Yeah, he was transhuman.
Yes.
For sure.
So.
Michael Rooker had to suffer for his craft of this movie. According to James Gunn, Michael Rooker still has back pain because of this movie, because in the scenes where he's at that slug that's slithering through the field,
yes.
you know, when they're hunting him, the rig that was attached to him kept pulling on his neck.
Oh, fuck.
And like, while he was trying to move forward, and it really hurt. And on top of that, at the end of the movie, with all those bodies around him and, you know, that were merged into him.
Yeah.
There was the way that they made it, it was some kind of like tent like thing that they put over top of everybody.
Yeah.
And then kind of like molded it in. That tent was pulling on Michael Rooker for the weight of everybody else that was in that. So he had to hold up their weight while he was holding up his head.
And he was probably trying to be a man about it, not saying anything. And
yeah, and he dislocated his arm in that scene, you know, where he first attacks Starla, and he wraps his, like, rubbery arm around her neck and tries to choke her out. That whole scene ended up causing him to dislocate his shoulder, and he did the whole scene with his shoulder dislocated. And then didn't tell anybody until after it was over with.
Fuck, dude. That's a no for me. I disconnected my thumb one time. I thought I was dying.
So that rubbery arm was really a rubbery arm. Like, it was disconnected at the shoulder. Yeah,
that's actually pretty funny.
I think that the zombie spit in this movie, like, is so nasty.
Yeah, that's fucking gross. It looks green slime. Looks like fucking the slime from a Nickelodeon.
I said this, I hinted at it when we were talking about Night of the Creeps. I like the prosthetic slugs in Night of the Creeps better in a lot of scenes in this one, because of the CGI, you really start to see it now. Like, I mean, it's not as bad in some scenes because they did use, you know, prosthetics, real stuff. In the scene in particular with where the teenage girl, Strutmeyer or whatever, she kills the one and the gel oozes out. Good scene, really good scene, and where it's wiggling toward her in the tub, which is directly stolen from Shivers, by the way. One-for-one scene. But the scene where they're all, like, breaking out of Brenda, they are so CG. I mean, it's covered in darkness, so it's better than it could have been, but it's still very CG.
Like, I didn't capture that. Excuse me. I didn't notice it. I'm not saying that it wasn't. Clearly it was. But it wasn't so noticeable to me that I'm like, this is real bad. I think what makes up for it is how good the real ones look.
Yeah, the real ones are, I mean, they did, and the slimy effect that they put on everything in this movie.
Real good.
It's kind of funny. Either one of you ever watched that movie with the guy, Alex Winter from Bill and Ted, called Freaked or whatever? Randy Quaid's also in it. Like,
I tried to get Randy to watch it. I don't think she watched it.
The way that Alex Winter looks in that movie when he becomes the freak reminds me a lot of Grant in this movie because of the mouth, because it's got that similar, like, pulled up rictus grin with the teeth hanging out or whatever looks a lot like it. I mean, visually.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite, like, I don't know if it's technically a B-movie because the production value looks high.
Are you talking about Freaked?
Yeah, Freaked.
Yeah, it was. It did not do well. It was a budget of $12 million, made $29,000.
$29 million to make that movie?
No, $12 million to make it. $29,000 is what it made in theaters.
That sucks.
They did a good job on the effects in that movie, though. They did.
They did.
But the effects in this one, the zombies look pretty good in this movie. I mean, they fit the part, especially like the creepy zombie kids whenever the girl's stuck in the truck. I kind of like the way that I know that he just had to go with it, but the way that he had the one girl's like eyes almost bugged out of her head and she's like, you know, we're itchy, you know, and all that stuff.
That was funny.
Is there anything else about the visuals that you wanted to, I mean, bring up? I mean, it looks good for the budget they put into it. Yes,
there is something I want to bring up. The way they had all the bodies in the basement of the animals, the whole menagerie, if you will, that fucking looked pretty damn cool.
It looked very sickening, too. Yes. It was really gross.
Like, I could smell what she was smelling. Like, they did a really good job of visualizing that.
The zombie deer was a bit much, but it was supposed to be. It was a little cray,
but you know, whatever.
A little callback to the beginning of the movie where Bill Pardee was like, why do we have to hunt these innocent deer with these high-powered rifles? And then he gets attacked by one, wishes he had a high-powered rifle to take its ass out. Mm-hmm. So,
what now, bitch?
Really?
So I'm assuming story-wise, since this is a creature from outer space that can not only controls all of the zombies, but also is a hive mind that is imprinted from Grant, that they are not technically zombies to you in this movie.
Correct. These are parasitic aliens.
Now, how did they communicate? It was always the thought in my head when I watched this growing up.
Bluetooth.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
They are all eyes and ears connected somehow to Grant. Like, I mean,
Grant is God, and his little worm wiener worms are his disciples. And they have...
he's just out there spreading his seed.
Literally, I mean, he's pumping his seed into everybody. He makes a broodmare for him.
Yeah, they have telepatheticness and ESPN.
Really?
You're asking me how they communicate.
This movie has so many good scenes in it, man.
Oh, yeah,
it does. From the first one where they're trying to corner him to figure out what the hell's going on, he cuts the dude in half. It's like, holy shit.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty good scene. Sets up the threat level pretty well for him. I even like just the scene of where, like, he comes in there. He's standing outside the window, and Starla doesn't see him at first, and she's calling Bill. Yeah. And then she comes back, and he's still standing there, and then he busts in the door, and that, you know, of course, he has the arm, but just the way he's staring at her, that's very kind of a creepy little scene.
Yeah, it was, it's like we're back in the visuals, but yeah, there were a lot of cool scenes in this. Storyline, which it sounded like we kind of moved into, you are correct, I do not really consider these aliens. There wasn't any biting going on, it was more of, I'm sticking my wiener worm in your mouth. That or they're sticking those tentacles into your chest. I think that was just Grant, though, that was doing that, yeah?
That was just him. And it's funny you say the wiener worms because the one scene that they made him, James Gunn, cut away is the two young daughters that are the sisters to, you know, Strutmeyer or whatever.
Yeah.
Because the people behind it, and James Gunn agreed, the worms entering the mouth was a little too sexual to put on kids. So they cut away from that.
I'm going
to
go with James Gunn reluctantly agreed because he's the one who's had the pedo parties.
I know. I've heard all about it. I'm just saying that he put it out there that, you know.
Oh, well, congratulations. Here's a cookie. He's still a fucking weirdo.
He has some weird stuff about him. And he's associated with some people that's had some weird stuff.
Yeah.
Like Rainn Wilson for sure is in that mix. But anyways, the story is pretty straightforward. It's kind of similar to, I mean, in a weird way to Night of the Creeps. And I hate that about that. And one reason, because James Gunn has never admitted that he's ever seen that movie or that he got any inspiration from. And it's like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
It crash lands. You got the space slugs that eat in the brain and that make, yeah, it's different. They're a hive mind in this versus just being individual, you know, carriers for the slugs, but still, yeah, it's a similar concept.
I feel like this is the second movie we reviewed, at least second movie of James Gunn, that he's like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. And his movie was like damn near identical. And I can't remember what the other one would have been.
Yeah, I don't know what it would have been either, but there was certain things that he took in Dawn of the Dead that he claims that he never watched another movie that, you know, and it was similar to that.
He's fucking full of shit.
Why do that? Just give it kudos, dude.
Yeah, like, you should be, like, maybe because they didn't want to buy the rights or they don't want to admit that, and then the person be like, well, that was my idea and you owe me some royalties, but still, like, I would have asked.
Well, the strangest thing about it is he admits his other inspirations. He says John Carpenter's The Thing, a.k.a. Grant morphing. Shivers, I mean, the bathtub scene in particular, but he mentions Cronenberg, so he gives those two credit, but he won't say anything about Fred Decker, and I think there's even a quote out there from Fred Decker or somebody who was close to him. It's like, we saw the advertisement for the movie, and we're like, what the fuck did you made our movie again, dude? Yeah. Like, what is this?
Yeah, I think that's fucking some bullshit. Maybe he thought it was just too small of a movie and it didn't matter. It was a blip and his was going to be so big. I don't know.
I mean, there's enough differences that the court would probably not side with Fred Decker, but I'm just saying at least give the man a little bit of credit. Yeah. Like, I don't think James Gunn has ever admitted that there's a similarity between the two films.
If nothing else, even if, like, you know, Decker doesn't get anything, fine, he doesn't get royalties, whatever, at least you've now directed a fan base and said, hey, FYI, go check out this film or this, yes, I got it from this film, and it kind of inspires people to want to go look at it, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, whether they like it, like, you know, we did, or they don't, like you, I mean, or just think it's okay, still, it would get eyes on that movie, you know, one way or the other.
In terms of this story, I have to ask both of you something, because this is, to me, such a man thing, but if you find something weird like that out in the fucking woods, whether or not you're with your whore or not, are you guys poking at that like he was?
I mean, I'm not going to, but... I mean, Babe? I'm not stupid when it comes to...
I don't know. I've seen enough like horror movies where I know not to do shit.
Okay,
like that.
And that's what I want to hear. I like, same
but,
thing.
But it's like Johnny the Zombie in the first movie. Why would you go near that pod that's got like the slugs all in it?
And leave your fucking date, but I don't know. Yeah, so...
Look, and again, both movies, they're with a woman who is good to go, and they leave the woman to totally, go look at the thing. Yeah,
totally sounds like what an 18-year-old guy would do. Let me go investigate.
Wait, hold on. I just want to... touch the steamy pile of something over here.
Now, it makes more sense for Grant because in that scene he is conflicted. He doesn't want to cheat on Starla. We'll give him credit for that.
Yeah.
Although he is on the verge of cheating with the town whore. But
yes, with the girl who was just 10 years old when he first met her. And she was like, she's like, well, I was willing.
And then he laughs about it.
Yeah.
Is that another James Gunn like work in?
Maybe, I don't know. And granted, they're both consenting adults at this point, so that's it is what it is. But like, that was gross.
Well, they made Michael Rooker gross in this anyways because there's something in the trivia about where he's trying to make love to Starla right before that, and she's having none of it, and then he flicks her like nipples, thinking that's going to do something. Michael Rooker chose to, or, you know, did all that, and, like, she really was just like, this is, you're grossing me out, dude. Like,
oh, that's hella funny. He looked nervous in the scene, so that was actually pretty funny. Oh, my God. Yeah, I wanted to know that. Maybe it doesn't count for you guys, because you guys have actually seen a lot of horror films, and you're like, yeah, I'm good. I've kind of seen what can happen. But I feel like most guys would be like, yeah, what the fuck is this, you know?
It's got a little bit of the Stand By Me, like boys picking at a corpse type thing going on for, you know, with regards to that scenario. It's like, hey, do the thing, you know, like the meme says.
Yeah.
I do like the small town setting of this, keeping it like Southern. James Gunn does work in a few jokes, and I don't know, it could go both ways in how he works them in, like the scene at the end where the old lady, who is one of the brood mares down in the basement that's feasting on the corpses, which they do eat flesh in this. They do eat human flesh in this, just dead flesh.
Wait, was that human flesh? Because I thought they were just eating red meat.
No, they were eating people because MacReady starts biting an arm of a person because he gets infected.
Okay, so this one gets moved up to aliens. This one gets moved up to zombie status.
When they infected that shitty mayor, and then all of a sudden he just fucking goes sideways.
Yeah, and he's sitting there, and he's just like, he's crying, but he's like, he sees the guy's arm, and he just like, and he doesn't like it, but he's still eating the flesh on the hand. It's
so hungry.
Good. Yeah. But she makes that comment to him before he gets to the top of the stairs and gets the penis, you know, tendrils in him. She makes the comment. She's like, "And I always hated you fucking Republicans."
Oh,
you know?
Shit.
And I'm just like, given the situation, like, even if he was making the comment, because I'm sure he's very left-leaning himself, it doesn't come across that way just because it's so ludicrous that you're like, okay, so if the zombie is representing Grant and Grant didn't like Republicans, then, you know, whatever. You know, it's kind of, it's insane in the moment that they're saying
it. Let's talk about it. You guys aren't the good people.
Damn.
Like, I feel like they would eat each other when they ran out of actual flesh.
Well, they probably would. So I found it funny. I was like, this doesn't ring as bad as it could just because who's saying it? Like, they're not the good guy.
Yeah, like, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what I'm getting at. Like, I don't know, man. Anyways.
And then there's the comments from Bill Pardee at the beginning of it. And he's the protagonist talking about how, you know, macho it is to go out shooting innocent deer with a high-powered rifle. And it's like, okay, that's a little bit of James Gunn's commentary on hunting culture. Okay. But I will give him this. His dialogue, which he prides himself on, is fucking great because he does tap into, like, everyday regular folk dialogue pretty well. Even in the Guardians of the Galaxy, he's got a way of writing his characters to where they're relatable because the way they speak is not like, you know, it's you could imagine somebody that's a friend or a neighbor that talks like that.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, he and even in like he wrote the Dawn of the Dead remake. I mean, the dialogue in that movie is pretty fucking good, too. I mean, he's good at writing it.
Yeah, actually, now that you say it, yeah, we did kind of mention that, so.
I mean, the story, however, is just, I mean, it's just like he said. It's funny because we talked about Night of the Creeps being a mishmash of, you know, mishmash of, like, B-movies. This is a mishmash of 80s, like, sci-fi movies. It's, you know, Cronenberg, The Thing, Night of the Creeps. I mean, like, all thrown into one movie together, basically.
Yeah, I would say so. It's done better, for sure.
And then they, you know, and then I like the focus on the thing that he does right with this movie, though, is that he makes the main character, even the monster, still sympathetic at the end.
Yes.
Because even when he's, like, got all those people merging into him and that really visually, like, disturbing way with a fat man just, like, or almost orgasming as he's, like, melting into Grant's flesh. Like The Blob, which is another movie that's kind of, you know, steals from a little bit. He has that moment where he's speaking through the other bodies. Yes. To Starla, and it's still kind of human, you know.
Yes. Like
how he's responding. So, I mean, it's good the way that he works that in.
Yeah, she could still get to him, you know, even in her. I would have stayed with my husband, honestly. I'm like, fucking no one else in this town to have to fucking deal with. He's going to take care of me. I know he's going to take care of me. And he'd probably leave me in this form, too, because she was hot. And her hotness level went up because look at her husband.
He left her in that form several times throughout the movie when he could have done the penis tentacles on her and made her into Brenda.
He genuinely loved his wife. So you can't find love like that. Look at the dating world, Starla. You want to fucking go out and date? Nah, stay with your husband. You'll be happier. He'll take care of you. You'll rule the world together. And I'm sure he can do wonders with them tentacles.
I mean, he was working them on everybody else but her, so, I mean, there's that.
Nope, I can't deal with a cheater. I would have stabbed him right in the heart.
Or in the neck, and then
the heart. Had to blow him up. I want to hurt him where he hurt me.
I do like the scene, too, working in the story elements, where James Gunn has the teenage girl have like the moment where the slug almost makes its way into her brain,
and while
she's trying to pull it back out, like she's seeing visions mm-hmm. of the monster. That's a good way of getting that exposition out of the way without having to 100%. Like have a big monologue or something.
100%. They took what, a minute to a minute and a half to quickly flash what is happening, and they did it in an amazing way. Visually, it looked so incredible, and you got to see it through this girl, and now she has an understanding. So now she's a tool in the movie, a useful tool, not just some person that needs to be saved.
Yeah, because she's giving like the other characters like basically what's happening, how to defeat this guy,
yeah.
you know, that sort of information. Which,
okay, that's one thing. However, she discovered by accident that heat will hurt them. Did she relay that information to them? Because I don't remember hearing her doing that.
I don't know. And it's funny, too, because that's another way that this rips off Night of the Creeps, because in a bathroom,
yes.
she burns the thing just like, you know, JC did in Night of the Creeps.
Yes.
Just...
So I don't remember her giving that information. But again, like I said, this was stuff that made her useful versus just some dead weight that has to be rescued every 5 minutes.
Yeah, except for the fact that later, well, she also saves Bill from the deer, so there's that, yeah. but there is a scene where they're moving together and she falls down, so that's like a typical, like, yeah. you know,
bitches always trope. Be tripping.
Yeah, always tripping over their own feet, even when they're not wearing heels. But
wow.
Even the way he sets up the characters in the movie, you get just enough, like, at the beginning to know what they're about. Like, my favorite scene is just setting up the characters is Jack McCready, like, pulling in the town, honking his horn at this redneck sitting there in his, you know, who's left his truck there, cussing them out, like, you know, to the nth degree. This woman and her daughter are standing off to the side, and she's like, "Hello, mayor," you know, like, trying to get him. Yeah. And he's like, "Oh, yeah, hey."
It's a small town. They know what the fuck is up.
But just the way that he goes about it, I'm like, I love this. I love everything about this right now. And the way at Deer Cheer, he gets up there and he works that whole like religious angle. He's like, now in the Bible, he gave dominion over the, you know, like that whole way that he sets that up.
Oh my God.
I don't think of the main characters, there's a weak one of them, because they all get their moments to stand out of the four. Well, three technically, because McCready does get, you know, his at the end.
He's still a core four. Don't you dare take that away.
Yeah. But of the four that remain at the end, they all get their moments to kind of stand out a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I can't think. No, I really liked how everyone, even when it seemed like it was going to be cheesy, like Brenda being the whore and everything, which is so typical of Brenda's. I just, you know.
Wow.
But I don't know. I thought that Brenda was going to come off real cheap, like real bad, but it actually, I don't know. I think she did a pretty good job.
The scene where she sees the tentacles and that rash yes. on his chest, she's real. I mean, she did a pretty good job acting, you know, yes. in that scene.
Yeah. Trying to get away from him and everything and being worried about her baby. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Even when she turned into the balloon, she was worried about her baby.
Yeah, they did address that because mm-hmm. the kid was with the foster people. But the foster people were probably, once the worms got out, they probably became worm people. So yeah. Did the kid really get saved?
I wonder if it had baby rabies. I don't know.
It had the parasite slug in it. That's what, ugh. You know, that's what happened to it.
That's been the theme ever since we've been having like rabid, ever since we did rabid. Oh, baby rabies.
This movie has like a after credits scene that is very similar
I was waiting to see.
It very similar to Night of the Creeps theatrical cut, because a cat walks up on the brainstem of Grant, which is now the vagina thing from outer space.
Oh God!
And it's sitting there with a little needle waiting, and then it goes to black, and you hear the cat squall, and that's the, you know, so it spread itself again, even though they thought they had defeated it.
Fuck, I was like, there's going to be end, and then it finally rolled into the black credits, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess there isn't anything, because for the longest time, it just kind of showed them walking away into the distance, which is like, no one's alive in this fucking town. Grab a car.
Yeah, there was a truck right there yes! and they walked past it.
And you know that person leaves their keys in their fucking sun visor.
Well, even if they didn't, I mean, I would have attempted to just let it roll downhill for a little bit so it would save some walking.
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, they lived way off from town because, I mean, a guy that had a house that nice on the hill ain't living with the regular folk. It just ain't happening.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what movie it was because you brought up the cat. And there was a movie, I think I don't know if it goes into possession season, but I know that in the movie they keep singing the song, Time is on My Side. And it's almost like Evil Dead where this spirit just kind of jumps from body to body.
Oh, Fallen.
Is it Fallen?
Yeah, Denzel Washington.
Yes. And so at the end it turns out, maybe that's a spoiler, well, it is, it isn't, but towards the end, a cat basically gets the spirit, and it's like you didn't realize it could take over animals.
Oh, okay, yeah. I just thought it was interesting because it was almost the exact, I mean, it was a dog in, you know, Night of the Creeps, but theatrical cut ended with, you know, it, well, in that case, it was the dog still had it, and it spread it to the person, and this was kind of reversed, but still it was setting up, you know, it's still out there, you know, they didn't get rid of it.
Yeah.
Top scenario. But that kind of gets into acting a little bit. Like, I feel like everybody kind of nailed their characters for what they were supposed to be in the movie. The humor was well done by everybody. I mean, the timing of the jokes was just what it needed to be. Like, even that scene, it's a really quick, but like, when Party comes in with the Strutmeyer girl and like they and Jack McCready's on the ground and he's got that big old boil, that womb that's growing off the side of his neck, and he's like, kill me. He doesn't even have to say it like another time. It's just he pulls his gun out instantly and blows his brains out.
Yeah.
And then just walks on nonchalantly like, yep, that's over with, you know, not worried about that.
They're from a small town. They're all about putting cows out of their misery.
Really?
Am I wrong?
I don't think that's the policy in a small town.
And it was a policy. It's just like, I don't think people would sit there and generally watch the animals suffer. If they know that they need to put the horse down, they put it down.
Yes.
Well, the joke in that scene is that he always hated McCready anyway, so it wasn't like it was doing him any harm to put a bullet in his head.
That's true.
But I mean, just little scenes like that, you know, add to the humor of the movie because they, you know, they're really quick.
Yeah. It's quick, but it also keeps the thrill and the horror of the film alive because this is not a film that's supposed to be a horror comedy.
Not supposed to be a horror comedy?
I don't believe it is.
I believe that was the intent of the movie, was to be a horror comedy.
I think they did a better job of making it a horror film than they did a horror comedy. I think the hints of comedy in it were expected and well delivered, but I don't think that it's not who the movie is.
The direction that James Gunn gave them was that it's all happening and it's all real, but your reactions to it is where the humor comes in.
Well, yeah, and I think that, like, you put, you know, the Scooby Gang and our spouses in a situation like that, dark humor is 100% going to be how we get through it.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they had Nathan Fillion reacting was, I mean, he literally says, he's like, my whole acting, you know, direction in the movie was just like, what the fuck am I seeing right now?
100%. Like, you know, and he gave that off. That was what he put off in the film. Because really, what are you fucking dealing with? I wouldn't be able to believe it. You know? What's gotten into you?
Anything you all have to say about, like, any of that stuff? Acting, visuals, anything like that?
No. I know music is the next criteria that we need to talk about. I don't remember any music in this.
You're full of shit. You're every woman in the world. Okay, to
one
me.
Song. That's it.
You said you didn't remember anything.
Well, sorry, one song. But obviously, it's not even. If that didn't even slip into my brain, what?
I don't know. I mean, they repeat it like. During the biggest scene in the movie where all the zombies are going toward Grant, you know, to take Starla there. Right. They're playing it.
He's trying to woo her, and I'm surprised that she didn't go for it, honestly. She's just fucking vain. She was all worried about looks and everything. Ma'am, it's the inside that counts.
In real life, she would have went for it. In the movie, she didn't.
That's okay. I agree with my hubby there.
A lot of the other music in the movie was kind of like shit kicker type music because it was like,
that's what
you know,
I was thinking.
Having...
If there was other music, it's going to be fucking backwoods country.
Yeah, even like the last song in the movie was like, you know, just kind of like this new age.
I love you, but leave me the fuck alone.
Or, you know, it's something like that.
That song was funny. I love you, but leave me the fuck alone. That's, I feel like my husband wants that on his in his musical.
Really?
You do love me, but sometimes you want me to leave you the fuck alone. But, like, I can't be your piece. I'm Hispanic. It's literally in what I am, his panic. So I have a job to fulfill.
So do you fulfill that role then, being Hispanic?
I think I do.
You want me to get in trivia now?
Yeah, let's do trivia.
Jenna Fisher, who was married to James Gunn at the time, not now, by the way, was not originally part of the cast. The actor in her role begged to be released from his contract because he had an offer to shoot a pilot, so Gunn let him go rather than have a performer on set who didn't want to be there. Gunn then swapped the character's gender and gave her a few more lines. By the time the movie was released, Fisher had become immensely popular on The Office. So she was the one who went on the Tonight Show the night before the film opened to talk about this movie. She was the one that said,
I'm so hungry, right?
And she was the one in The Office that was Shelby that was on the calls or whatever. And was like, whenever they came into town, that's how they knew she had turned. Because she's like, hey, killer. You know, like she and... She disclosed that she got the role of Shelby as a birthday present from James Gunn. Being a big fan of zombie films, she always wanted to play a zombie, and upon hearing the news, she screamed with joy that she was becoming a zombie. So, therefore, they are zombies in this movie.
I don't know how it works in Hollywood. Do you not get to ask your spouse, who is a director in big films, if you can be a part of it in some way? Because I feel like I would shamelessly do that, even if I didn't have a speaking role.
Listen, Leslie Headland made her wife like a main character in The Acolyte, and the bitch couldn't act to save her life. So, I mean, but she still got a major role in it. So kudos to them for working nepotism to its, you know, ultimate form.
I feel like if my husband was making a film and I was like, I want to be in this film, but he's like, look, I don't have anything that fits. I don't honestly think you could do this. I don't want you to feel bad, but look at that. This is what I'm trying to achieve. But I will put you in the background somewhere. Like, that would be good for me. So, like, the fact that she's already an actress and she's having to, like, she didn't beg for the role, but I felt like was that a thing? Like, she had to wait until somebody backed out and then she was, like, you know, second
chair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically, that's how it happened in the movie.
Damn. Anyways.
Maybe that's why they're not together any longer.
Yeah.
He traded, I don't know, well, you might say up. He's got a much younger, better looking, you know, that's how it goes. Actually, she's in his works now, and she's in all of his works now, the new one that he's dating. So he did do that with the new one.
Ladies, if he wanted to, he would.
Yeah. Brenda is watching the Toxic Avenger with her baby when Grant comes to her house. Throwback to Lloyd Kaufman and Trauma. Gunn and Fillion both agree that the most horrifying scene in the movie is the bit with Grant having sex with his wife. Elizabeth did not have to act much in that scene, says Gunn, as Rooker was groping her. There he flicks her nipple. Apparently one of the producers fought hard to have Gunn cut the nipple flick, but they kept it in the movie.
Jesus Christ.
Rooker dislocated his shoulder while filming the scene where he attacks Starling, grows the floppy arm. It had multiple setups and was a long shoot, and he didn't tell anybody that he did it until it was in the can and done. So kudos to him.
Damn.
James Gunn's intention with the character of Starla was essentially the Hitchcock blonde, and he found it in Elizabeth Banks. He saw other actresses that said they had the sort of WB good looks, and she had the old time, you know, grace and good looks that, you know, starlets did back in the 60s, basically.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, Elizabeth Banks is not only pretty in this film, a lot of her films, she's got some kind of appeal to her. So I could totally see, and she worked so well in this.
And she's usually really funny. That helps too. I mean, when you're needing a little bit of comedy from them as well.
Yeah.
In the script, Brenda is the niece of Randy Flagg. Randall Flagg is the bad guy in several of Stephen King's novels, including The Stand. Don't know why they worked that into it, but
Okay.
Fillion recalled Gunn telling him that we are making a funny movie, but we're not making a comedy. From that point forward, Fillion better understood the tonal balance that he needed to aim for.
I think that it worked out perfectly. I didn't get too much funny from this. I know there was fucking jokes here and there, but I feel like we get that in a lot of scary films.
They don't, I mean, the jokes come in the darkness, like yes. You said, like dark okay. humor that they're responding. Like in the scene, for instance, a perfect example of the dark humor in this movie, when the zombie Wally comes back or whatever, after, you know, he's been in the barn and he's got the, you know, he's been infected with a worm. The first thing he does is get up and he starts talking like Grant. And it's like, you know. And then all the other zombies start talking like Grant. And it's like, why did you leave us, Starla? Yeah. You know, and like, and to show how good the dialogue is, when they're talking, you can kind of hear a little bit of Michael Rooker coming through, you know.
That's kind of cool. I think one of the scenes that stands out to me to kind of define this was when they all get in the car, when they're not so much escaping, but they're just kind of figuring out what the fuck they're going to do. And Nathan Fillion's character is like, everyone having a good day? Y'all feeling good? It's like, as a matter of fact, we are fucking not.
There's several scenes of the movie where they do something similar to that. So that's where the humor comes in in the movie. Grant is established as wealthy and worried about other men showing active interest in his beautiful wife, including James Gunn as like a kind of a nerdy science teacher. And he has his controlling side that is definitely inching towards the wrong side of turning ugly. But when given the chance to sleep with Brenda, he does refuse her advances.
Kind of.
James Gunn revealed that Grant died as soon as he was infected, but the resulting entity retained much of his personality, including his genuine love for Starla.
If he loved Starla, he wouldn't have kissed Brenda. I would have divorced him and owned half of the empire.
You would have got the tentacle rape, and you would have been a broodmare making worms, is what you would have done.
Speaking of that, they have sex when he's already infected, so does she have fucking baby rabies?
That's not how it works in this. This is not like Shivers where you get the parasites inside your body whenever you get penetrated.
Ugh, it's a parasite, though. It's got to be in the sperm.
But the parasite in him is lodged in his brain, and it spreads its semen through those tubes.
Semen demons. Ugh.
Because if you remember at the end of the movie, and this is really gross, Nathan Fillion only gets half of the penis.
That's true.
And he starts having the cum ooze out of his body, like, and even through his mouth at one point. Ugh. It's like this milky, like, substance.
He doesn't get double penetrated.
You got to have the double dong to get to get pregnant in this movie, yeah. So there you go. Michael Rooker accidentally broke his glasses off camera while doing kung fu kicks by himself.
What a dumb fucker. He also got hurt in other things. I think you get to that point where you're older, but you still want to be super cool. I think he was going through something.
I can only imagine him off to the side just like kick. It's like, what are you doing, man? Like, what the fuck is this? The question about the film that Gunn gets the most is people inquiring as to who sings the song at the very end. It's called Baby, I Love You by the Yahoos. So there you go.
All right, I'm adding that to my YouTube fucking music because that was a funny-ass song, Baby, I Love You, but Leave Me the Fuck Alone.
Gunn had originally scripted the infection of the two little Strutmeyer girls to appear partially on screen, but he decided against showing it. Or did he, you know, or is it somebody else told him, saying that they didn't want me to show it, especially in Europe. They're very touchy about children being killed. And I'm really glad we didn't because the worms entering in people's mouths are quite sexual in certain ways. And it's difficult to watch. To do that with a child would have been too much.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
The scene where the monstrous Grant slithers through the field, unaware that he's surrounded by cops, was created practically and manipulated by multiple puppeteers who were then digitally erased from the movie with CGI.
Okay. Really? Interesting.
The scene of Kylie getting attacked by a slug in the bathtub is a reference to the key scene in Cronenberg's movie Shivers, a film about humans being taken over parasite alien worms. They're not aliens. They're actually made in, you know, Canada, as it were.
Yeah.
Director James Gunn is on record as saying Shivers was a major influence on this film.
Okay.
I can see, if you watch the movie, you can see where he stole a lot from it. A couple of different studios wanted to produce the film, but Gunn went with Gold Circle and Universal because they wanted to start production immediately and offered him real freedom to do what he wanted with the movie. The name of the high school is Earl Bassett High, named after one of the main characters in Tremors.
Oh my God, that took me back.
The scene with Grant visiting Brenda and her baby was filmed in a house in British Columbia that smelled of cat piss and other odors. Gunn recalls being stuck in there gagging while the rest of the crew were thankful to be outside.
Fuck.
Still, thank you very much to the family for letting us use your house, added Fillion.
Yes.
The original title of the film was Wiggle.
No.
The producers requested it be changed to Slither because it sounded more threatening.
Yes, thank you. Wiggle, just I'm thinking of fucking Wiggle Wieners.
That's what you think of. It's a Wiggle, Wiggle, Wiggle. The helicopter.
No.
Jack McCready, the mayor of Wilsey, is named after Kurt Russell's characters, Jack Burton and R.J. McCready from the John Carpenter films Big Trouble and Little China and The Thing.
There you go. Oh, my goodness.
Gunn recalls during the film's premiere screening that he spent more time watching Fillion's mother than watching the movie. She was jumping from scares, flailing from worry, and Gunn joked, "I don't want to put down your mother, but I think there was some urine trickling down around my feet."
Gross.
When you make a movie in Canada, you have to have a certain amount of Canadian actors, says Gunn. You're really only allowed to have American actors if they're stars. Fillion got in as a Canadian, obviously.
Oh, that worked out.
Nathan Fillion confirmed that one of the things he really enjoyed about playing Bill was his bewildered and terrified what the fuck is going on reaction to almost everything that happened rather than reacting like a standard action hero would.
Yeah, it was very much realistic.
Gunn points out that while he's hardened on gore effects and such, the dog corpse that Starla finds in her basement made him really sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was gross, and I was not happy.
The rut-row warning is big time in this movie.
Yes, yes, lots of innocent animals lose their lives.
Kylie's mom has to vomit on her, says Gunn, but we only had three of those jackets. It took three takes, the first two of which resulted in minor dribbles from the actress's mouth. They rehearsed, and Iris Quinn learned that she really had to cough to get the stuff to spurt out in a way that I wanted, and then she was able to vomit appropriately on her daughter's face.
Okay, like, does she have to really vomit?
Sounds
she
like
had
it.
At least she had to cough enough to get it to come up out of her mouth to really make it look like it.
Fucking gross.
You got to work for your craft. Come on now. The shot of Brenda's baby in the crib teething on a tomato was originally accompanied by a bit of dialogue explaining why that was the case. Brenda says that tomatoes are cheaper than toys and the infant actually softens them up, therefore making them better for cooking.
Ew, this is why you can't trust fucking homemade shit. Fucking baby rabies all over them tomatoes.
Gunn absolutely hated the scene where the silly Muppet deer attacks Bill. One thing that was difficult, Gunn stated, is getting little girls to walk like zombies.
Okay, yeah. That's why we don't have kids in these films.
And Gunn is no fan of the shot where the worms cover Party and Starla. I think the worms look really bad, and I do agree with him. So.
Okay, I mean, you know, you live, you learn, you move on.
But the rest of the movie looked really good, so, you know, he did his job. The film carried an unauthorized end credit that states no animals harmed during the production of the film. American Humane did not issue that disclaimer and was not notified before the filming began. And when they learned that this disclaimer was on the film, they actually contacted Universal Studios and a screening was given to them, and the film was already completed when Universal purchased it. By the time it was brought to Universal's attention that the disclaimer was on there illegally, the movie had already been distributed to theaters and were going to run it. Universal had to agree to remove that disclaimer from the DVD when it was released.
Oh, okay.
So animals were harmed?
No, it's just American Humane did not issue that.
And they didn't actually, they were not on set to prove it, so they weren't willing to have their stamp on it.
Which oh my is, God. Did it say American Humane, though, or did it just say no animals were harmed? Because can't you just
so
place
what?
A...
They just got to pay
they
for
put
some...
no animals were harmed, but that's because that's under their purview, and they said, we don't allow this.
So they just have to pay for a jerk-off to sit there and just to make sure?
Yep.
That seems
that's
like a waste of money.
Do.
Yeah,
dude,
fuck that.
I would love to have that job just to make sure they animal, like, especially if there's real animals on set.
You're
just going to
sit
them.
Around and eat all the shit off the fucking
hell
food
yeah,
thing.
The craft
table.
Services. Okay,
yeah.
I get craft services. I get paid. And I get to play with the
but
fucking
But you're
animals.
Not contributing anything to the fucking
movie.
Yes, I
movie. Am. I'm making sure the animals aren't getting hurt. Fuck the movie. I want the animals to be safe.
Oh, my God. This yeah. is why you're filming in another country so that no one gives a shit.
They did. They filmed it in Canada. In that's, Canada.
Yeah. Canada is another country.
Or you film it in some third world country and you actually kill the animals and eat them like they did in Cannibal Holocaust and then get in trouble over it. So there you go.
You know, I'd be so good at that job. And you know, I'd be so happy oh too. God. All I have to do is make sure that Rover is safe. I would be so good at that.
You talked to that dog and called it a bad dog. You are not getting that stamp on this movie.
Yeah.
That's how you would be.
You leave schizophrenia alone. She's a good girl.
Oh my God.
At around 48 minutes, when the mother tells her two daughters to go to bed, they're both reading Goosebumps.
Hell yeah.
And the books in particular are The Girl Who Cried Monster and You Can't Scare Me.
Oh, I used to love those books so much. I read every fucking one except for any newer ones that have come out ever since I stopped reading them at like 16, I think.
What'd you start reading then? Porn?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No, actually, I was still reading R.L. Stein. I was reading more of the Fear Street, and they had another. I want to say it was part of Fear Street, but it wasn't. It was like in a more. It was supposed to be like an adultier version of R.L. Stein, but it wasn't. It was more like older teen, young adult. Style, and I'll have to look it up, but I stuck with R.L. Stein. I just moved from Goosebumps to a more mature-ish level of books.
In quotation marks.
Correct, yes.
Jenny and Emily Strutmeyer were named after Jenna Fisher and her sister, so that's where those names came
from.
Yeah. And an inspiration for the film, according to James Gunn, the first image that hit his mind was of a young woman with an alien-like worm flapping and burrowing into her mouth. The story and title came later as he decided to bring back the feel of films he loved from the 80s. Specifically, he wanted to honor The Fly, The Thing, Basket Case, Return of the Living Dead, and more. So that's he made a mishmash of those movies as opposed to the B-movies that Corman, that Fred Decker did.
Yeah.
He, to be fair, he stole from better movies. I'll give him that.
Yeah, that's true.
Those are all bangers. Those are all pretty fucking good movies if you're going to steal from something.
But see, that the thing is that with the less credited movies or the movies that may not be as good, I feel like those are the ones he kind of shat all over, meaning he didn't give credit where credit was due, really.
Yeah. Brenda James, the actress who played, the whore in this movie, suffered from claustrophobia and a meat phobia that made her scenes with the meat products and the ones trapped in the bloated body very traumatic for her.
A meat phobia?
That's what it says.
Oh, my fucking God. I hate people.
Well, they made her experience a lot of meat. So, and she yes. got meat in all the forms.
Yes.
She has the meats, as it were.
The meats.
Gunn admits to casting the actor to play Hank, played by himself, when he was drunk. I'm just wondering why you cast such a homely man, asked Nathan Fillion. I love the fact that he would say that. I mean, that's how good friends they are. It's just like, why would you cast somebody that looks like that? The guy's homely looking. And it's James Gunn, you know, that he's referencing. Fillion had wanted to work with Gunn since seeing the Dawn of the Dead remake, which Gunn had written. He actually auditioned for that movie, was passed over. They said they wanted someone to be more of a young blonde woman, explains Fillion.
Wow.
Damn.
And that's how we got our heroine for that movie, folks. Don Thompson loves the horror genre and grew up with Universal's classics. And on the last day of shooting, he approached Gunn with tears in his eyes to thank him for the experience on working on this. One of his favorite scenes in the film was when Wally returns from the dead and speaks with Starla. And that's the one that I mentioned a while ago. That's one of the best like dark comedy moments in the movie.
Well, when you were talking about why James Gunn picked Universal, my first thought before them giving him freedom was that, oh, they're kind of masters of horror. They're not the only. I know there's other production companies out there, but they're kind of one of the biggest.
He knew somebody that was a producer for them too, so it was an easier, you know, like working relationship with them than it was going the other route.
Yeah,
that's one of the things that helped him. Gunn found it necessary to explain to the crew what bukkake means, as no one got the reference.
I was surprised at work how many people definitely understand bukkake. Like, obviously, if you're talking about it, you know what it is. However, at work, I didn't think some of the youngins knew, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I know what that is." I use the word verbal bukkake.
It's funny when you bring up words like that, and then people are like, "Oh yeah," and it's like, "How the fuck do you know what that means?"
Yeah.
It's like I'm a pervert. I grew up in the 80s and 90s. We got all kinds of porn. How did you figure out what that was?
They had porn way easier than we did. We had to remember what we talked about in the last episode. We had to work for our porn.
I know.
And
that's
now
we just don't appreciate it
anymore.
But that's also why we're more perverted, because we had to work for it, and we saw the darker side of the internet before it got a little bit tamer, as it were.
Yeah.
Anybody remember Rotten.com? I do. Yeah. I'm old.
We all do.
Hennenlotter's Saddle Lodge is a shout out to director Frank Hennenlotter's Basket Case and Brain Damage fame. Also, Frankenhooker, which is a fabulous movie and I highly recommend.
I'm sure you fucking do.
I love trauma movies, man.
Air Supply's Every Woman in the World was written into the script as Mr. and Mrs. Grant's love song. Fillion asked why, and Gunn said, "Frankly, I find the song creepy." He explains, but he backpedals a bit and says, "I like the song. I'm not saying I don't like it, but it's not my type of music. And but I do kind of like the song." But
what? So, he's just like pedaling and backpedaling and pedaling and backpedaling. Like, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and it's kind of like how he backpedals about the kid comments appeared on Twitter years ago. Every Woman in the World to me also plays in the theme of all the aliens being linked as one person. In a way, they are the infected women in the story, like Brenda, or every woman in the world, as the aliens are linked by the puppet master snakes in their brain.
Now fuck those hoes. If you turn into an alien, you better not be touching any women.
It's not me.
None of your wiener worms inside of any of these hoes' mouth. I don't want to hear it.
Well, it goes in their chest, okay? Let's get that straight.
I don't want
in their mouth.
Any of his things going into any orifices, natural or not.
Brenda is the only human who, once she gets infected, keeps her personality. All the other ones become basically versions of Grant.
Brenda,
so,
which one's Brenda's the one that got pregnant?
Yes, the
whore.
The
big balloon woman or whatever. She's the only one that's not Grant, basically.
Well, I got a feeling that she didn't do it on purpose. I think she got I don't think she got infected. She just became a carrier.
Yes, I agree with that. Like, not so much like the other ones are. Well, because the other people got.
The other ones are all from the worms, basically.
Primarily, but there's a few people that got the holes in their chest. Yeah.
Don't know.
I think everybody else who came to them, except for MacReady, they already had the worms in them.
Okay.
So he was just, you know.
That would make sense. And Brenda got quite the extended version of the, you know, the worms, not so much the weenie worms, but the tentacles in her chest. He literally just sat there while she's jolting and just emptying his demon semen inside of her.
But I don't know if that statement's true, because MacReady has his personality at the end, because he's begging Party to kill him, even though he's infected.
Did he get the weenie worm? Yeah, he did.
Oh, he got him.
Yes.
He got him.
Huh. Maybe
he got him in the neck. He got him in a bad spot to get him.
Yeah, maybe it just took longer. Maybe it depends on the area. Like, if it goes up your butthole, what's the time, you know, to brain ratio?
I mean, that's instant. If it goes up your ass, I'm just saying, you know. Ewan McGregor was actually considered for the role of Bill Pardee.
I could see it.
Not me.
I could see it. I mean, they kind of look the same-ish a little bit. Same but different. You know, white guys.
Okay.
Wow, that's offensive. The post-credits coda showing a cat getting possessed by the last surviving creature. In an early draft, this was meant to happen to Bill. After the Grant creature is destroyed, Starla sees the resulting wound later, prompting her to shoot Bill to death.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I was thinking that Bill was affected, so...
Lloyd Kaufman appears as a sad drunk in the police station. For the scenes of pregnant Brenda, a suit of 3 meters long was created where the actress had to get inside the suit and rest her head in a hole.
Ew.
That Brenda consumed large quantities of meat during her pregnancy was proposed by one of the film producers, who said if Brenda gestates thousands of baby slugs inside her as she fed them.
That is... I really hate to admit that this movie like made me hungry. Specifically for raw meat.
Really?
Did it make you itchy too?
No, it didn't. However, I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? My mouth should not be watering when I'm watching her eat raw meat. And I'm like, what? Why is that a thing for me?
Did you get infected by the stem cells from rabbit or something? Like, that's not normal.
No.
That's not a normal hunger.
You know how I know that I didn't get infected? It's because I still have diabetes.
Oh, yeah, it would have cured that,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So I did not Google. I meant to Google today what it means when you are craving raw meat. Maybe I'm low in iron, but I don't eat raw meat. Like, I cook it for a minute-ish.
I can't hear you say that without thinking, because they pulled it out on Neurotic and some other shows. This clip from the first season of Rings of Power, it's a scene between like a couple of the main characters, and it's really got a lot of gay innuendo in that scene. And the worst part of it is one of them looks at the other one and he says, "Give me the meat and give it to me raw."
Damn.
I mean, just being forthright with it. I mean, just telling your whole intentions at that point.
It basically says that I am low in iron, protein, and vitamin B12 if I'm craving raw meat. And I am. I know that I am. I have.
I thought you was getting ready to say for a second you need the vitamin D. But
the show's over.
She's always craving the vitamin D.
Oh, shut up.
All right. Review time. I'm going to say 4.2 for this movie. It's good. It's a good movie.
Anything to elaborate on or?
I like the characters in the movie, which is always, if you get me with characters that I can enjoy watching and rooting for, then that you've part of the, you know, I mean, you've got me part way to getting a good score.
Yeah.
I feel like they really did a good job with the monster. I mean, Michael Rooker, really, I mean, he walked that line between very abusive husband and somebody who actually cared for, you know, his wife. So I like the acting in the movie.
Yes.
And the special effects are great at times.
Yeah,
so,
majority of the time.
The only ones I don't have, the CGI on the worms is about the only misstep. But it was, what can you do otherwise? They want a bunch of worms. And I mean, you know, that's what they can do. So.
Yep. Babe, do you want to go?
There ain't nothing to go on. I like this movie. I give it a 4.5. As many flaws as I can point out with the movie all the time, like inconsistency with some things, I still fucking like it, man. Another CGI gets dicey, but that was still kind of when CGI was... Like, look at The Phantom Menace. And like a lot of the Star Wars continuation ones from The Phantom Menace on, even the CGI for that fucking blows.
CGI for the Marvels blows, yeah. I mean, in certain areas.
Yeah, and they didn't even have a budget near that. I mean, what was the budget of the movie?
$15 million.
It's like $15 million. Yeah. It's not even a fraction of what it cost to hire Brie Larson.
Yeah, but she's bold and beautiful.
She's every woman in the world to me.
Shut up. Don't ever say that shit. Yeah, this one was, okay, now this was almost a 5. We almost had another fiver out of me. I was, because I told you, I was like, I remember liking this film, so I was scared. I didn't think it was going to hold up for me, but I enjoyed almost every part of this film. You know, the thing that brought it down to a 4.5 for me, and I say brought it down, because I literally was riding that 5 wave, was Brenda. I did not like Balloon Brenda at all.
I just thought it was fun.
Talking about the hungry bitch?
Yeah, I did not
like
it.
That was awesome.
I mean, yeah, to you maybe it was. I just thought it was just a bit too much. And this To me, this was a higher end movie.
It's just funny you say that because James Gunn in the interview about that said that they kept coming back to him about the design and saying they kept showing him different things. And he's like, no, bigger, bigger. I want this cartoonishly large.
Okay. And you know what? He was making a funny movie. I didn't take the movie as a crazy funny movie. Like, it had its jokes and I appreciate the jokes. You know, we all want a little breather here and there. I thought everything was appropriate considering what was going on. I mean, we watched, for zombie season, we watched Shaun of the Dead, and I got some real fucking good scares out of that one. But the jokes were a lot more slapstick, you know? And, yeah. And I still enjoyed it. So that's why I didn't really consider this one a horror comedy. This one was a horror film with some dark humor mixed into it. That's how I look at it.
It's degrees. It's not. Yes. It thankfully, it's not jokey with a little bit of horror in it, which I don't like. Those movies don't typically do as well. They're mostly a comedy with a little bit of horror in them.
Yeah, and Brenda was just too cartoonish. It was too much. I'm glad that he got what he wanted out of it. That was the thing that threw me out. But still, 4 out of 5 is still pretty good. And I am surprised that having watched this, I watched this a few times when I was younger, and I can't believe that it's exactly how I remembered it, and I enjoyed it just as much.
Yeah, it holds up.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's even better when you go back and you see like Rabbit and some of the other movies that inspired this movie, because you see where he took from and, you know, kind of ran with it. So.
Yeah. And I mean, and like I said, I give it the zombie stamp of approval because we do have somebody non-on arm. So it passes. Yep. I'll allow it.
We have somebody who what?
Gnawing on an arm. He's like, okay. He just kind of shook his head like, okay, yeah. That's all it took. One thing, one scene, and we're back.
I'm interested to see what you think about Life Force when we cover it for the
She will not like that movie.
Yeah, that was going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies,
there's a lot of titties in that movie though.
Bet you guys love that.
Matilda May just, you know, walks through the whole movie just nude as the day she was born. So there you go.
Speaking of movies that I don't like, or that you guys, I don't know, Reverend, you were beating around the bush of whether or not I would like Repo. Hubby, what did you think about Repo?
I like Repo.
You like Repo? Do you like it a lot?
I give it like a almost a 4.
Almost a 4. Reverend, what did you give it?
We were in the 2s. Like a 1, huh? Because I tried watching it. I didn't.
Oh, yeah. He couldn't even get through it. Hard. And I gave it like a 2 point. I think I gave it a 2 point something.
See, I don't mind musicals. That doesn't bother me. I can get
past the musical. Wasn't either. The worst part of the film.
It's too much of a slow start.
It just there's certain things about it. Like the music wasn't like getting to me. Like a musical's got to be catchy to a certain degree. And I don't feel like, I mean, if you're, because you got to like the music, or you're not going to like the movie. And I didn't really like the music in it that much. Like, it didn't, like, I'll give you an example, and I mean, you know, think what you want. I mean, it is what it is, but the Hugh Jackman movie, The Greatest Showman, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's a movie for women, all that stuff, but the music's catchy in that fucking movie. It really is. Like, I mean, right from the get-go. Like, and so, I mean, I got into it because I was like, all right, it's got some good music. Let's see and it's about, you know, basically Barnum Bailey type, you know, circuses or whatever. So I was like, it's all right concept, you know.
I haven't
Hugh
seen
Jackman's a good actor.
I haven't seen it. Is it pretty good?
I thought it was, I mean, a pretty well, I mean, it's very much like a glorified take on, like, you know, like the Great Showman, you know, type thing that they had going on with, you know, Barnum Bailey circus or whatever. But, you know, sugarcoats a lot of stuff, but I mean, it's good for how it's told. It's one of those type movies. It's kind of funny too. If you watch Deadpool and Wolverine, there might be a reference to it.
Oh, there is.
That's all I'm going to say.
There definitely is. I know there was a verbal comment about it, but then there was a visual too, and you and I both missed it, and yeah.
Yeah, it's in the movie. It's just a blink and you miss it reference to the movie. But I thought it was pretty good. But like, I just didn't like the music in Repo. Like right from the get go, I'm like, I like the style of the music. I just didn't like the songs that they were doing.
I would say that they definitely tried to do Phantom of the Opera mixed with Rocky Horror Picture Show. And they
see, that movie's got catchy songs, too, even though it's batshit insane.
They
the plot is stupid in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I say they tried, and I also say they failed. So, and this is coming from someone who hasn't seen all of Rocky Horror, but I've seen enough to know.
You know what that movie does tell you, the Rocky Horror Picture Show? That trannies come from outer space.
Okay.
It does say that, basically, in the movie. I mean, that's what it
confirms. I'm just saying, Hollywood made it. Maybe they know something that we don't.
I feel like they would know, and then I feel like they tell the truth through visuals and say they just wrote a story when it's actual truth.
And Susan Sarandon was hot back in the day. Not that she's, you know, terrible looking at her age now.
Yeah, she aged pretty good,
She was a hottie, so... some people claim that about Tim Curry in that movie, though, for, you know, his performance or whatever. Yeah.
Tim Curry was in pretty good shape back in the day.
All right. So we're going to cover Life Force. We may or may not pick up Shivers. I really want to see your response to Shivers now that I've watched it. Like, it's batshit.
Maybe
like,
we could do it for the segment, movies you swear I'll love.
I don't know that I swear you love it. I just want to see your reaction to it.
Oh, my God. I wonder if we're going to get any more recommendations for movies that people swear I love. Because, you know, we don't have a ton of listeners. We have a pretty good following on YouTube, but not like in the thousands, you know?
Yeah, people throwing stuff out there, like, I mean, just off the wall, like that, you know, that we know that you wouldn't like, but it's like some B movie that we probably even like, and we're like, no, she ain't gonna like that movie.
So yeah, I mean,
not your wheelhouse.
Ticky, dude.
You and my husband called it, but that's the thing is, like, this was one of those things where they swore up and down, well, this will change your perspective. Like, you clearly like some musicals. This is going to be one of those that fits into your criteria. And it should have. I understand where they're coming from in thinking that, but it absolutely did not. And it was a flop for me. So, sorry. Not sorry.
It happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like not liking Night of the Creeps. It happens.
I did not like that movie.
All right, folks, with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.